Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. We have Dr. Lanice Block on the line, and she is founder and CEO of Sancore Consulting. Lanice, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Adam. I'm delighted to be here.
All right, Lanice. So I'm excited to have you on. For those that watch the show often, one of my favorite type of episodes to do is when we're welcoming new members into our community and into our best-selling Business Leaders book series. So hey, first off, I just want to say congratulations and welcome you for being chosen to be published in the upcoming book.
I'm super excited about that. This has been a goal of mine for a very, very long time to be an author. I feel like I've done lots of things, accomplished many of my goals on my bucket list through my life. This is one of the things that's been one of the major humps that I've not been able to do. So I definitely am an honor to be a part of the Mission Matters team and be able to be a part of this amazing establishment and have my contribution be a part of this amazing publication.
Well, it's an honor to have you here. And as everyone knows, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with our Mission Matters Minute. So Lanice, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Lanice, what mission matters to you?
The mission that matters to me is, this obviously, the mission is around how to address inequities in societies. My business is focuses on diversity, equity, inclusion, and it matters to me that there are, we have a history in our country of of having the lofty goal of having no inequities, but we're always struggling forward. We always are wanting to make it happen. It's something, a lofty goal as we move, one of the founders says, toward a more perfect union. And that's my goal, is to continue to help us as a country, as a society, continue to move toward a more perfect union.
So where did all this start for you? When did you get inspired to go down this path of helping people with diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Well, you may already be able to tell from my references that I'm a former social studies teacher. I taught high school social studies for about 15 years, their inner city program in the inner city. And really that what drew me to that experience was that when I looked around and saw the things that were happening, in society, both locally, nationally, regionally, I always was wondering what is the why around this? What is the context? Why are these things happening? And so as I learned more about what the background information, right, that helps us inform the social science and how we're experiencing the world today, I understood that was to me a very liberating experience to understand the why, but then also it provides in my view, a pathway to how to solve many of the problems. That we've had many opportunities throughout our history that were opportunities to do what I would say the right thing. And some of them we've taken, and some of them we've not taken. So my intention is to help us as a society. I feel like my role is to help individuals, collectives, organizations be able to make the right choice, to do the right thing when the moment comes, when the opportunity arises, when that critical experience happens, or when this opportunity to do the right thing or do the wrong thing, to really help them be equipped to do the right work and make those courageous decisions as part of the ecosystem.
So, and I love it. And thank you for sharing that, by the way, because I feel like there's many times when people are inspired to do something and they have this vision or this mission, but they don't necessarily always take that next step to actually make a business out of it and think about how they can really serve a greater population with that mission or vision. What kind of advice would you give to those that are out there that maybe they're sitting on an idea? It doesn't have to be DE&I, it can be, but just in general, they're sitting on an idea, they have this thing they want to do, but they haven't gone out and done it yet. What kind of things would you tell them?
I learned a concept when I was doing, so I like to do workshops and all this kind of thing, but I learned a concept that I really have tried to apply for a lot of things. It's like it's an MVP, a minimal viable product. And so that's where you take something, an idea that you have, and make the smallest version of it that is viable and try it out. and see what where you get from it. So I would encourage anybody who has an idea. That's what I actually do encourage people, and you know, even like young people, whatever you're doing, to try, you have an idea for something, take the smallest viable product of it, make, create an MVP, and then try it out, test it out, put it out there, and see what happens. Sometimes you're like, oh yes, this is great, I'm going to continue, and this all I have to do is just like make this bigger. And sometimes you're like, oh, this was horrible, this is not going to work. I need to make a lot of changes before I do something different, or before I continue this road. So that would be my idea. Just try it. But I'm the philosophy that I'm sort of more. I'm more of a jump in and try. Yeah. If life was a pool, I'd be the person kind of just jumping in and just figure it out once I'm in there. That's kind of how my disposition. Other people are like, you know, walk around the perimeter and take water samples and observe for a week. I'm not that person. I'm just like jumping in there. And so that's my thing. Just try, get something and try it out and see what happens. That's kind of, I don't know if that's good advice, best advice I would give.
Hey, I tend to be on your side of the spectrum on this one for sure. A funny story. So we're experimenting and we've been putting out quite a bit of YouTube shorts. And the idea is to get more and more traction and more, get stories like yours that I believe people need to hear about DE&I and other, you know, meaningful stories to reach a larger audience. So the first version, the MVP, my team's like, oh, what do you mean? It's got the black on the bottom and the top and the this and the that. And I'm like, let's see if anybody even cares about this type of content from us. And that would be obviously on our podcast, a lot of people, a lot of listeners building that for years, but is our content good for YouTube shorts, or is it good for Instagram reels, or is it good for TikTok? And we didn't know until we tested. So instead of, you know, what some of maybe my team would have wanted to do is what you said, put your toe in the water, do this, do that, like talk about it for a certain amount of time, create the perfect piece. I was like, no, post it. Let's see what happens. If it works, then we'll spend some more time on it. If it works great, then we'll spend a lot more time on it. If we knock it out of the park, we'll build a team around it. But we're not going to be diverted on what we know works and we know is our bread and butter, which is to, you know, produce the podcast and the live show and to distribute it. So I'm a huge fan of the MVP model you mentioned.
Right. And you don't know anything until you actually try it. And I feel like that's another thing. I take a lot from my teaching experience, because I would sit, you know, when I first started, I would sit in my, you know, space at my desk and make these, you know, elaborate, wonderful lesson plans that had all the stuff in them and all the wonderful things. I was like, this is going to be so wonderful. My students are going to love it. And I would get to my class, my students, they're like, this is horrible. Especially I had high school students and they're like, this is so lame. And I would be like, oh my goodness. At first my feelings would hurt about when I was a young teacher, but after that I was like, my feelings are not gonna be hurt. And so I always was like, I never know what is gonna actually work with my students until I actually try it. I always, even when I'm teaching at the college level, say you never know if what's gonna work until you actually try it with children, with whatever lessons. And so I take that even until my business, my own business, and as I advise other people with businesses, that, you know, just try it, because you won't know it's gonna work in a vacuum, in a room sitting with all the people who you employ, all the people who are beholden to your idea in the first place. You're not going to know if it's going to work with those people. You have to put it out there and give it a shot and see what happens. Now, again, you don't want to spend, like we just talked about, a whole lot of time, a whole lot of money, a lot of interest in it, but create something small and see what works, and be able to have in place a process to track it, to evaluate it, to determine what are the metrics that you want to do, and then what you're going to do with an information once you have it. And that's, I feel like that's the key to key to success and happiness, at least according to me and Adam, right?
Oh, for sure. And I think this is a great transition, actually, Lanice, because when it comes to a lot of business owners, entrepreneurs, executives that watch this program, and, you know, they may not have started a DE&I program. They may have wanted to. They may be thinking like, where do I start? What does this look like? And they may also be, you know, stuck on how do we move forward? And I feel like bringing in a consultant or, you know, getting some outside help is often a great way to move initiatives faster with from somebody that has more experience and that they're just experts in the field. Yeah. So let's maybe start that part of the conversation with just defining DE&I programs, especially for those that haven't ever experienced one, been to one themselves, or launched one for their businesses, but they, you know, they kind of heard of it, they hear the term and they're like, should we be doing it? Should we not be doing it? Maybe start by just giving us an overview of what a program looks like.
So diversity, equity, and inclusion, this is as a basic kind of notion and idea, is like diversity is this like very basic definitions is who's at the party, right? Who's at the party? And inclusion is what are the people who are at the party? Is anybody asking them to dance, right? And then the equity is how are the people, how is the work that's happening? Are they feeling comfortable? Are they the right amount? Is there, you know, rock and roll versus, you know, blues, you know, all those kinds of things? Are the people that are at the party getting what they need? And so it seems to me, right, and so to many people, that it's a no-brainer that all businesses would want to have a program of some kind that speaks to the ideas of diversity, equity, inclusion, because, right, because our society, our history has let us know that has not been the case for many, many years. And that is, and we are working toward changing that, but we still, like what we always say, we're lots of change. We've done a lot of work, but there's still a lot more work to go. And things are, because we are a society, we are still experiencing BIPOC people, and that's Black, Indigenous people of color, that's the new term, are still experiencing such great disparities in almost every aspect of life and almost every kind of, in every space. We know that those things still exist. And so there still must be work to be done. So businesses, organizations need some sort of version of that. And so what that looks like depends on your organization. If you are a big organization and you need something big, if you are a small, you know, mom and pop, you need something small. So it can be, they can be, you know, what I call fat and skinny sort of the versions of it. But basically, it's really about what are you doing to address the inequities that exist in societies as they are filtered through your organization, your business, your school, whatever it is that you do. There are inequities that exist there, and what are you doing about it? That's basically what I feel like a DE&I program could and should look like, and it's very tailored to what your experience, where you are, what your business are, the size, the stakeholders you involve, because everybody is not experiencing oppression, disparities the same way. So for instance, if there are people that are, for instance, Indigenous, they're experiencing the oppression differently than people who are Latinx, people who are African-American, people who are Asian. All of those people are experiencing different things. And so if you have one particular group or people who are experiencing that have disabilities, you need to be responsive to those people who are in your ecosystem and doing things that matter and make a difference to them, not just blanket, oh, we're going to have, you know, international, you know, potluck day. Not that, right? So this is something that is really meaningful to the people that are in your space.
And I agree with you that in a way it's just the right thing to do. But, you know, time and time again, like, businesses are learning it, and there's more information coming out that shows that there's also a business case for this. So this can lead, it's good business to be diverse, whether it's from new ideas, retention, like all these factors that not having a diverse workplace can lead to. Maybe can you speak on that a little bit more? Maybe the business case for having a DE&I program?
The business case is, you know, they just say that more diverse teams are function better, that they make better projects, they make better decisions. It's better in every way. The challenge, though, that sounds really good, and it seems, you know, obvious that then businesses would just, oh yeah, let's just do this then. The challenge of that, though, is that it does not happen, and there's a whole myriad of reasons why it doesn't. And that's what I feel like needs to be addressed than just saying in the business case, is that it makes a lot of sense, because it does make sense. It's obvious to those of us who know that, right, who are understanding. But there are barriers that come along and mitigate that benefit, right, that keep people from either investing in that or keeping that as a reality in their system. And so how do you address that? And so that's where I feel people who even know intellectually that this is something that is the business case, that it makes much more sense and to make you a lot more money. But even the intellectual sort of understanding of that, it is impeded by many times the political, the social, the emotional resistance that people get when they try to do something involving diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Where does a business start? So, like, so let's say somebody's watching this and they say, you know, we need to start seriously considering this. There's a business sense. It's just the right thing to do as well. Where does a business start when it wants to think about creating a DE&I program?
So, first, it starts with, what is your intention? What is your goal around the program? Is it to really to speak to a particular population? Is it, do you have a particular a backstory around it? Is something necessarily with your founder or something that it, some experience you had? Is it, are you in a space that has experienced a particular sort of disparity? So are you, you want to address that? So be really clear about what your intention is. The next thing is to have a dedicated leader. It's very risky. Many times, unfortunately, people feel like it's a great risk to be involved in diversity, equity, inclusion programs for, you know, a lot of reasons. I can give you a social studies lesson about that if you want. That might be another podcast. But it's very, people feel like it's very risky. So people need permission to participate and to really buy into it. And the permission comes from the leader. So it has to be, you know, the school superintendent, the nonprofit executive director. It has to be the CEO of the business. Whatever it is, it has to come in many ways, you know, from the leader to get kind of a jumpstart. Now, it could be a grassroots sort of movement pushing up. That's it'll take a lot more time. And it could be, I mean, it can be absolutely be done. And I'm not poo-pooing that, but I'm saying if an organization decides this is what we want to do, the leader has to take it and make a stake on the ground. They have to decide that this is the proverbial hill that they might die on, you know, that kind of thing. And then the next thing is really the starting with self-reflection. You can't be like, oh, well, we're going to do a DEI and this is what we think everybody else should do. We really in the self-reflection is about what are the organization, you know, as a collective. Where are they? Where do they come to this space with? And then also as individuals. So the reflection has to happen both, you know, individually and collectively. Where are the mental models? People often think people, especially people who are part of the majority culture, feel like they don't have like culture, or that they're not part of a system, that they're just kind of these blank slates. And that's not true. Everybody has, every space has a culture. And so acknowledging who you are and how you show up into a space is the very first step with any sort of DEI program. And that's, again, both collectively and as individuals in the space. And the next thing really is to have a resource allocation. You know, put your money where your mouth is, right? Walk the walk, you gotta go talk the talk, you gotta walk the walk. And so that's another way to signal to others that this is something that is important. This is a priority to our organization. This is, again, it gives me permission to lean in, to invest emotionally in this, because again, that's something that has to be required to invest in emotionally, mentally, socially, right? Into this process is this resource allocation, having to do something, but then that's so important and often such a big deal, but not assign resources to it, indicates that it's not, you know, that the organization is not taking it seriously. Really. Then establishing some sort of baseline. I always encourage organizations to do something like an equity audit, or having these ultra inventories like diversity. IDI stands for intercultural development inventory, those kinds of things. Those kinds of inventories are kind of to say, this is where we are. This is who we are right now. Then you can take that and you can make a plan for what are the things you're going to happen going forward. And then also it's a way for you to establish some metrics for the future to determine what progress has been made and to kind of continue that cycle. Those are the things, those are the places kind of like, you know, I would start and not in that necessarily a specific order, but those are the components that should be a part of the initiating of a diversity, equity, inclusion program.
I like the way you explain it, because what you've displayed is that this is something that's actionable. It's something that's measurable, and it's something that can also improve, you know, a business's performance, you know, lead to a better quality of living for the employees and a safer and more inclusive workspace. I mean, lots of wins there. Why do you feel that? What do you feel kind of holds some businesses back from moving forward with a D&I program?
It's scary, risky, and because there are, this is a big question, Adam. I could, you know, talk for hours about this. So I'm trying to think about like where would I start with that in a succinct manner. Diversity, equity, inclusion issues in the United States are people feel like, I'll start big and kind of trying to funnel down. People feel like that they are an assault against America. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they don't want to admit that this is an issue. Right. Yeah. And so to have these programs is really, I acknowledge that there's a problem. So let's start there. People often don't want that to be, we don't have this problem. racism is over. We elected Barack Obama. What are you talking about? You know, that kind of thing. So they don't want to acknowledge. This feels like an assault against them. So that's one thing. That's one thing that keeps people from doing it. When there are people who say, yes, we do understand this is a problem, then we are just like, okay, now then what do we do about it? Oftentimes they feel like they don't have enough knowledge about what is happening and then what to do about it, because they also don't want to be on the wrong side of the cancel culture. They don't want us to do the wrong thing. They don't necessarily feel equipped to be out in the space.
You know, and that's the risk part that you're talking about, right? Like there's a little bit of risk there.
Yeah, the risk part. They don't want to be out there. They're like making a mistake, and all of a sudden, you know, everything is you know gone to hell in a handbasket, and they're like, oh wow, I didn't realize that was a wrong thing.
I can see that.
Paralysis of fear keeps a lot of organizations from really, you know, committing and making these grandiose, you know, overtures that are really in a lot of ways required, but that keeps them in that kind of space. And that's kind of the bigger view. The smaller view, as we funnel down, is keeps people from doing that, is it makes people often in the space where they feel like they have something, but if they see someone else get something, they feel like it's being taken away from them. And so it's sometimes a knee-jerk reaction that while I think intellectually, this is a good idea that everybody should have rights, right? I think that everybody should have the same, you know, equitable pay and equitable stuff. Intellectually, I understand that. But if that means that I have to give up something of mine or that I feel is mine or that's making my life wonderful or comfortable, that is a different sort of, that moves from the intellect to something else. And so that I'm reacting, not necessarily out of intellect, but I'm reacting emotionally. And so people are often responding in emotional, social ways to things that are even, I experience it with diversity and inclusion, that are opposite and even in contradiction to how they feel intellectually about diversity, equity, and inclusion, because we present it, we see it as a binary, but I would say it's a false binary. It's like, you know, we have like with parents, when people are parents, once you have one kid, and you feel like, you know, because I know when I had just my first child, I was like, I can't imagine loving another human being as much as I love this child. It's just not possible. But then I had another one and I did. Right. And so it multiplies. And people don't understand. People often don't understand this, that it multiplies. And these things, you know, and I'm not being naive and think like resources.
Of course.
Because there are finite amounts of that, but there are ways to reframe and re-juxtapose different things so that it can be a multiplying effect and not a subtraction. But it's hard work to make people understand that on an emotional, social way versus what they're thinking and believe and even espouse intellectually. Those things often are disconnect. There's some dissonance there with diversity, equity, inclusion issues because so much of what has happened with our socialization in our country, with our history, that I think that lends to the to that.
Now, I know we can go further in there. And by the way, you can do your whole own podcast, I mean, series on the topic that you just mentioned and dig further and further. But I want to spend some of the time that we have left here actually talking about Sankore Consulting and how you're helping corporations and small business owners and other organizations really excel in this area by helping them with their DE&I programs, whether they have them and they're looking to move them forward or they're looking to start a first one. Maybe tell us a little bit more about the company.
So Sankore Consulting started it in 2017. And it's Sankore, people always like, what does that mean? I like to say it was Sankore was a college in the University of Timbuktu that existed in ancient Mali in West Africa back in, you know, ancient times. I forgot the exact time. I used to know the time. But anyways, it was part of Timbuktu was a university and of a renowned university. And Sankore was a college within it. And Sankore, it was about having, you didn't have to be admitted to the college to attend these, but it was like an organic intellectual space. So people would come there and share ideas and have these discussions and this, you know, this learning experience all together. And it was a horizontal experience, you know, versus, you know, typically in a college experience, it's very vertical, right? The professor knows everything everybody else is learning. But it was a very horizontal experience. So when I heard that, I felt like that's exactly what I want, an environment I wanted to create. That at Sancori is about all of us coming to the process and having, I don't juxtapose necessarily myself as an expert, but really as a member of the stakeholding community to say, what is happening here and how can I help us help each other? Because I definitely feel like the process, the works that I do, the assignments that I'm a part of, the contracts that I accept are things that are near and dear to me that I believe in with my heart, my mind, and that are part of my own, you know, sort of mission of doing this work. And so I lend myself to the process and feel like I'm a part of the team while I'm working with them. And so that's kind of, you know, in general, what Sancori is about, is that we are about coming into the space and being, you know, one of our tags is, you know, all of us are smarter than one of us. And that's definitely where I like to begin and where I like to enter in to any sort of relationships and engagements with any sort of the partners that I work with. Further, we often work with, you know, organizations that are in a variety of ways. We do things like equity audits. And that's what you're asking me, like specific things that I would have done. Okay, so things like equity audits where we look at, and that can take a lot of different forms. We look at documents like policies, foundational documents, frameworks, stuff like that. Then we might have like one-on-one interviews with via a protocol that we created with executive leaders. We would do stakeholder engagements potentially. So there's lots of things that go into the equity audit that really is the intention of it is to say what's happening in this space. Kind of presenting a report about that. We do trainings, cultural competence training, microaggressions training. We do those kinds of things that are really at a very one-on-one sort of level with organizations to kind of say, this is some things just like basic knowledge that you should be aware of and be part of your lexicon, that you know what's happening, that you can have these conversations about. And then we also have kind of tiered sort of professional development. We have a series called Developing Your Cultural Intelligence. That is a series that we do that talks about, you know, first your developing yourself and your own kind of identity. Then it talks about your relationships and your competency. And then it talks about your leadership and your intelligence. And so that's kind of a series. Then we also have the main kind of signature offering is developing an equity leadership identity, which is talks about the five lenses that need to happen. Paragon kind of level, the thing that we ask people, we kind of steer people to at the end is really being able to make courageous, equity-based decisions. We feel like that is where the rubber meets the road. That is the paragon, because often people who are leaders in organizations, they want to do the right work. They've gotten the intellect to match the emotion, to match the social, and they're like ready and poised. They're ready to do it. But they come against so much adversity and resistance to the process. They don't continue because when they get to the apex of them having to make the decision that is a courageous, equity-based decision, they often are not equipped and they may stop just short of making that critical decision. And that's where so oftentimes I've seen equity initiatives fall apart. Right. That's why we have created a pathway that helps leaders get to point and say, understand what that means to be at that point. And then actually when they're there to be able to pull the proverbial trigger, right? And make a decision and say, this is what we're going to do. This is where we're going to stand. And this is how I'm going to speak to the resistance and rally the supporters. So that's, I think like that. So that's some of the things that we do specifically around diversity, equity, inclusion in relation to organizations and government agencies and nonprofits.
Well, Lanice, I know we're not going to really talk about the book much today, and that's intentional. I'll let the audience know. So Lanice is going to be in the upcoming book launch. But the reason is we'll be bringing Lanice back on for a second interview where we're going to do a full interview on her writing in the book. So don't worry about that. This is a little bit of teaser, just warming up and getting Lanice into the community and acclimated with our amazing podcast community and Mission Matters community overall on Facebook. But Lanice, I just have to ask, well, first off, it's been great having you on the show, but I just have to ask, you know, what's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for Sancori Consulting?
Well, one of the things that I'm doing is I'm trying to develop some products, and this is me again, trying
MVP, come on. I love it. I think I know where this is going. Go ahead.
This is me trying things. And so part of what I mentioned before, that Sankore comes from the Mali Kingdom, ancient West Africa. Well, one of the people that live there lived there before and still live there now, I call the Akan people. And they have these things called Dinkra symbols, which are symbols of leather. It symbolizes lots of different things. And so what I've done is created what I call a Dinkra dialogue deck. And so it's a deck of cards that are really, they're about being culturally responsive and learning and the experience. So they have the symbols, the African symbols on the front, and they talk about what the symbol means. And then there's a proverb on the back, and then there's a question, a discussion prompt that really focuses on diversity, leadership, and inclusion. And so that's the intent of that. And so people would have a culturally responsive way to do team building. And this is a deck that's in production right now. So that should be available very, very, very soon. I'm also making a sort of complimentary postcard sort of set to go along with that, that is also in production. So we're going to see how that goes and how that's going to move forward. So suffice to say, I'm in the process of making some products to complement some of the things that we do.
And more to come on this. I'm excited. And when we bring you back, let's see how far along we are with some of these other MVPs.
I'm all about
promoting your mission and what you're doing. I really do think it's amazing. It's great. And I know the multiplying effect of people like yourself when they're doing good, when somebody has this like strong mission they believe in, they start a business around it, they go out there, they start, preaching their message, whatever it happens to be. But in this case, DE&I, I think it's a strong issue and it's really important and one that doesn't get enough attention in the media or the marketplace. So I'm glad to see that you're putting your expertise, your time, attention, and love into it. That being said, if somebody wants to follow up and learn more about Sankore Consulting, what's the best way for them to do that?
You can go to my website, which is just www.sankore.consulting. And on there, my social media tags are at the top. And then there's also a link to make an appointment to set up a free consultation, 30-minute consultation with me. We can just sign up and we can just chat if you want. Or if there's a project you want to talk about, we can do that as well. So that's the best way to kind of contact me, and or just email me at Lanice@Sankore.consulting. And I don't know if those things are going to be showing up here or something, but they're definitely, those are the ways to reach me.
Yeah. And what we'll do is we'll put all that information in the show notes so that our audience can just click on the links and head right on over. And speaking of the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters or listening to an episode or engaging with us, we're all about bringing on business owners, entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share their mission, the reason behind their mission, really what gets them motivated to go out there in the marketplace and into the world and make a difference. If that's the type of content that sounds interesting or fun or exciting to you, we welcome you. Hit that subscribe button because we have many more mission-based individuals just like Lanice coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Lanice, until the next time, look forward to working with you again. But for today, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity.